Good evening, everybody. Welcome to What the Buck? I am Old School, coming live from Studio 76. It is good to have you, and once again, you heard that we have no bumper music. I apologize for that, but I will assure you I got a great email from Mr. David, who said he will have new music for us next week. Now, he gave me another copy of the old music, but it still didn't sound right, and I said, to hell with it, we're just going to go without music. We got two guests tonight. We need to hop right to it and not mess around. So, as you can see, I'm rocking my 76 new Bucks jersey. I see in the chat room there was some chat about, I don't know, soccer or something going on, but I don't know what the hell that's all about. But it's nice to have you guys joining us here tonight on a lovely Wednesday evening. The other new addition we have to the studio, let me reach back and grab it, is my lovely new helmet that Matt and his friends got hold for me. And what's funny is I have it up here next to the old new helmet and the old helmet. And I got to tell you guys, and I haven't weighed in on this since the big reveal and the big announcement and all that, where we had all the hullabaloo about whether we liked the new jerseys and liked the new helmets and all that sort of thing. But having had a chance to sort of digest it, pardon any fat jokes that may be forthcoming, this shit looks pretty good. The helmet looks exceptional. It makes the old helmets look old, if that makes sense. That's probably the best way I could articulate what it does to those helmets. And if you follow me on Instagram, which is Old School WTB on Instagram, Ronnie was over here today, and he put a little picture together with the jersey behind it. And the jersey with the helmet looks pretty damn hot, guys. I don't have a white jersey because they don't make fat guy sizes, but at least the red with the helmet, I got to say, having it in hand, I'm going to give it an overall big thumbs up. So I'm going to put this back here as well. But there you have it. That's the new helmet and all of that good stuff. Tonight, like I mentioned in the announcement, we do have two wonderful guests tonight. We got Rick Brown representing Polk County straight from Wesley Chapel. We did a little testing beforehand. I think he's actually going to be a live video Skype tonight, so we'll be pushing the envelope yet again. We did that once before with Kirk. And it worked pretty well. We had some little hiccups to get through, but all in all, I thought it worked real well. So we'll have Rick Brown coming in talking about minicamp, and then we'll have the Ginger Badass, not the original Ginger Badass though, because as Patches, our staff writer, wrote this week and I released this morning, he has essentially established that the original Ginger Badass for our Buccaneers is Malcolm Glazier. If you've not read that article on whatthebuck.net, I encourage you to go out there and do that. It is outstanding. The other point we're going to have is we will have Mark Cook coming in talking about minicamp perspectives, et cetera. Different set of questions for those different guys. We haven't gotten a perspective from Rick Brown yet on minicamp, so I think it's going to be good to get his perspective on what he has seen, as well as some deeper dives on some of the pieces and parts that are coming out of camp. There are a couple of little pieces that sort of percolated out that we're going to want to get some details on. Kurt wants me to remind Rick to mute his Ustream audio for Skype, which I will most certainly do. And hopefully that'll work. Rick is seemingly more technically adept than I thought. I did not expect him to whip into video, but I got a call from a name that I didn't recognize right before the broadcast tonight, and it was like a very strange name, and I'll make fun of him about it when he gets online. It was Rare Essence, and if any of you use Skype, you'll know that you'll get spam mail there, just like you get spam mail anywhere else. And if you do that, like, it's a crapshoot. Rare Essence, I'm like, fuck, this could be anything. So I figured, well, let's see what it's all about, and it was Rick. And apparently, the story goes, and Kurt, you can probably validate this for us because you're an official media guy and a musician of sorts because you do all the DJ and stuff. That's allegedly a band out of D.C. that he used to be a big fan of, and he just took their name. I don't know. It sounds a bit sketch to me. Anyway, a couple of other little notes. You guys know what's going on. I expected to have the sponsorship done last week. I don't. I'll have it done this week. I said end of next week, so I'm still on track. I'll have that shit done by the end of this week, and then we'll get that stuff locked down. I mentioned before, looks like we're going to be at home with the Wing House, as I mentioned. I've already mentioned Patch's article. If you haven't seen that, go take that. Take a look at that. The big news for me and for some of you guys is going to be that the training camp dates were announced. Now, what was funny is, and I can't remember whether it was Shooker or someone else that had sort of prognosticated what the dates would be based on the calendar, just kind of take a shot at it. And I think he was actually right about the night practice. But the dates, and I'm using Mark Cook's article off of pewterreport.com because it laid it out very nicely, are available. I'll drop that link over in the chat room right here. Those are the links. For those of you who are planning to go to training camp and you're trying to plan a vacation, I had a couple of people ask about that on on our Facebook page, there are the dates. Now, the afternoon practices have raised some suspicions. Or probably more well-described attitudes. Chief Operating Officer Brian Ford says this is a chance to get more fans out there towards the end of the day in the cooler weather. Now, the times for most of these practices are 4:30 to 7. I actually think he's right. 4:30 to 7 is after the heat of the day. Now, they do have some 2 to 4:30s, but the majority of the practices are 4:30 to 7. There are a lot of people that are coming out saying that this is not a good move, that later in the day is actually hotter, et cetera, et cetera. I actually think it's a good move. I think that people are going to be able to get out of work a little early, go by and see the team. I think there's a lot of excitement going on. This should draw a lot of attention. If you guys are planning to get out there, like I say every year, get out there early, get a good spot. Now, I don't know how they're going to lay it out, and I'll ask Mark and Rick about that if they have any idea. I don't know that they will, because I don't know if the team has let that information come out yet. But in my opinion, there are some prime areas for watching. Now, what you'll have to do is pay attention to where the actual activity is going on, and we'll talk about that as we get closer to training camp. As is often the case, the trip to Canton will completely fuck a portion of that time for me, but it is Hall of Fame, so that doesn't matter. We're going to do that. I will be missing my night practice as well because of that. So Spent is saying in the chat room over here, afternoon rains. Now, Tom brings up a good point. I think that the heat thing is overblown, but the afternoon rains are a good point. In fact, they had to leave the field today because of afternoon rains. If you've lived in Florida for any period of time, you realize in the summer we do get afternoon rains, and they are a son of a bitch. The lightning and thunder, well, the thunder's not so much a big deal, but the lightning and the storms are pretty nasty, and they usually come between 2 and 4. Who knows? You know, we'll have to see how that works out. They are testing meteorology, but we'll have to figure that out. I see Jackie in the chat room is having a problem with the stream. If one of you guys can help them on the back end, I don't have any other reports of any problems. So right now, Jackie and Bucko Pat, this is on you guys, not on the mainstream. Everything looks good over here. I would recommend a new browser or something like that if you're having persistent problems. I do apologize for that. 4:30 is the hottest, says Calico Jack, and he's a fucking rocket scientist, but I think he's full of shit. I don't think Calico Jack has been outside in 22 years. But he's bitching, and he's using his real name this week instead of something crafty, so I can at least identify him. But we'll see. I'm excited because we have dates. I've got those dates in my calendar. I know the ones that I'm going to miss. I am working on our credentials for training camp. Hopefully that's all going to work out again. If not, then I will beg, borrow, and steal my way into as much of training camp as I can, as always. Another note, if you listened to the broadcast last week, you will know that there was some discussion between myself and Mark Cook about possibly collaborating on a Pewter Report / What the Buck podcast. We are meeting on Monday to discuss that further. This is something that looks pretty exciting. If you are one of the crossovers who is a Pewter Report person as well as a What the Buck person and think that would be something cool, let people know. I think it would be something a little bit fun. You guys know what we do here is relatively unique. I get to just kind of be myself and talk shit and use, you know, profanity because I have a limited vocabulary, or so Mr. Costanza believes. And we do our thing. We do it the way we do it. I think that a joint podcast with Pewter Report would obviously be more like the broadcast we did when we were on terrestrial airwaves, but I think it would be fun. I think it would be able to bring a little bit of a different perspective, and I think it would be a nice merger of two very strong fan groups with a lot of knowledge and information. So we'll see how that whole thing works out, but I'll let you guys know as soon as I know something. After the meeting on Monday, I'm going to be meeting with Scott and Mark, and we're going to see if we can put something together with that down the road. So that would be very, very cool. Calico Jack says his weather prognostication hasn't changed in 22 years. I don't care. It would not be once a week. Right now, I think what we're going to be doing is probably a once a month with Pewter Report, and then a mid-season and an end of the year. Hey, Mega Dave UK thinks that during the year there could be two or three. There could be if I wasn't employed and have to maintain a life, right? I mean, we could do podcasts every day on a bunch of the shit that happens during the season. But we are all limited by our responsibilities and such. But regardless, or irregardless, in deference to the Reverend Jackson, we are going to see if we can get something kicked up and running on that, which would be a lot of fun. So my last little note before we start talking Buck stuff and then prep for the Pride of Polk County out of Wesley Chapel, Rick Brown, is a lot of us got together last week for a great charity event we're made aware of through Buck Nuts and Jen for Mike Clark. And this is one of those things that is sort of indicative of what the Buck has become in our almost a decade of existence. We talk a bunch about football. We have a bunch of drinks when we get together and have a good time. But the heart of what we do is really having a heart. And not everyone can attend every event, and that's the way it works. I think we had a handful, probably 20, 22 people that showed up from our group. I don't know, maybe 14. I'm bad at estimating. But the moral of the story was this is a gentleman who's fighting cancer not for the first but the second time, and the family was raising proceeds to try and offset some of those costs, and a number of our folks came out there to support them. John Pertile from bagboards.net, I need to give a big shout-out to John. He's actually related to the family in some way. I don't understand family relations because I'm from the Northeast, and we don't really track that shit, but he put on a great cornhole tournament in a beautiful facility over St. Pete. It was indoors. They had food and drinks and fun and batting cages. They raised just under $10,000 for the cause, which was stupendous. So for any of you who went out there and supported that, that was great. Thanks so much for all that you did. There's a little link that Spence dropped in the chat room. And to Mike and to his family, our hearts and thoughts are with you guys as you battle this again. That's never easy. It sure as hell isn't easy twice. And, you know, anything that we can do, let us know, and we'll try and do all that we can. One pounding of the chest moment is there were two brackets for cornhole. There were the pros, and then there were the not pros. I entered the not pro, got randomly paired up with someone, and we took second place. And, you know, I honestly think my back was a little sore from carrying the guy I had who was a pro. But he's a good guy. His name was Taco. I don't think that's his legal name, but we did come in second place. So, Spence says there's still some auction items that are available at the link that she sent, which is great. And Tom in the chat room, I know full well how much you understand the impact cancer can do to our family. And our thoughts are with you and your wife's battle as well. Hope things are going as well as they can be. This is something that touches everyone. It is almost impossible to find someone who has not been touched by this disease in some form or fashion. So to all of you out there who fight now or have fought or are, you know, fortunately through a battle, our hearts are with you guys. So big shout out to everyone who came out there and supported that. There will be more of that this year as we continue to expand in as much as we can in the charitable areas that we do. One other note, I lied. There was one other note. If you guys have not gotten out to the What A Fan page, I would recommend you do that. The What A Fan Sports Fan Conference is coming on again this year. It's going to be stronger than ever. It is going to be at the Swan/Dolphin Resort on Disney. And I don't have the dates in front of me, but if you get out to Facebook and What A Fan, like their links. Lowell and the crew over there, he goes by Fan Man. You saw him at our kickoff event and a couple of tailgates as well. He's got the big fan RV, doing a great job trying to put that stuff together and try and give fans a unified voice in some ways to let people know how important the fans are. You would think that would be immediately obvious to people, but apparently it's not. So, again, What A Fan out on Facebook. I'm sure Spent will be able to get that link. It's Labor Day weekend, and I don't know what dates those are because, again, I am fucking date challenged, which is absolutely horrible. But, you know, you got to know your weaknesses if you know your strengths. And since I only know about three strengths, I'll know more of my weaknesses. But that is something that if you guys can do, great. I know that a group of us will be over there again defending our trophy for the largest group contingent. And we shall see. And Kurt's house is sold out. People are trying to save some money on the hotel. So. But regardless, there's the link in the chat room. Thanks so much, Spent. Big shout out to Spent, by the way, who went to Georgia and back today and got back in time to do the show. So I sure as hell appreciate that. I know that can't be easy. Now, in the news, there were a couple of things that seemed to ruffle the feathers of Bucks fans. One was the comments by Lovie Smith and the staff about limiting Doug Martin's carries. And I think that what you're seeing is something that's more of a trend than a one-off. And so to me, that's not that big a deal. I think that you're going to give guys carries as you can. Now, I mentioned before on last week's podcast that I'm an old person. And so typically I think you should have a feature back. And, you know, when it comes to feature backs, they've got to get the majority of carries. And I think that's what you're going to see. I think we can evaluate that after the first quarter of the season and see if that is the case. Now, if it turns out to be the case that another back, whether it be Sims or James or Rainey or whoever the hell it is adapting more rapidly to Tedford's offense, then I think you'll see that. I think it's just a matter of common sense. You've got to feed the beast. And Megadave UK in the chat room says something that I think is particularly telling. And interesting as far as the impact it has on people's opinions, that the biggest impact will be on fantasy football. Calico Jack, damn it, look at him coming back. He just threw out a John McKay quote, "The ball isn't that heavy." I don't know if that's a legit quote, but that sounds very McKay-ish, and it sounds like something he would say about running the ball. Lenny Kravitz in the house. I'm going to give some shout-outs here after I have a sip of water, and then we'll prep for Rick Brown to call in and learn a bunch about minicamp. And I'm hoping next week to have information about what our credential situation will be, so you'll know when we can give some firsthand breakdowns of what we're seeing. We're also going to be trying to set up the camera setup we're going to use for our non-live broadcast, which we're going to be augmenting the show with this season, because we're going to do one live show per week on Wednesdays. We'll do another one that'll probably be on Mondays. And we may augment that if I can get the studio set up well, where it's easy for us to do, then I can drop some of these things, these little 2 to 7 minute clips from time to time. You guys seem to like those. That's something that I could do. All right. Shout outs in the chat room. Mega Dave UK, Spent, Will, Kurt, Jackie. Hopefully Jackie's got her browser working better. Skip Brown, B Shuck, Patches of What the Buck Writing fame. By the way, our editor, my editor, Carrie, who goes by at Filthy Nerdy on Twitter, very bright girl, very opinionated about writing. Her comment to me, and I believe Patches, she shared this with you, was that this was Patches' best piece, and in fact, she gave him a mental slow clap after reading it. I think people who have read it have been very pleased with it. Patches, nice work, nice continued improvement. Thanks so much for the effort. I look forward to even more content from you as we go out through the year. Big shout out, not to Brian Dory, who's too busy brewing beer to write more, you fucker. Stop having a life and write. I don't know, is that too direct? I've been accused of being too direct from time to time. Tom, Richard, Bucko Pat, Christine, David, Buck for Life, Lenny Kramitz, Rock Bucks fan, Buck and Roll maybe? I don't know. Let me see. I hate that I can't see the whole fucking name. I don't know what it is. Anyway, Calico Jack and one viewer. So, welcome to the chat room, you podcast people. You don't know what you're missing. Get your asses over here and participate in the chat room and have some fun. Now, when it comes to training camp, this is what's got me all excited. This is what I'm going to talk about. I had mentioned some of the areas that I like. Now, this is all predicated on them running training camp the way they've run training camp ever since they've gone back to One Buck Place. I don't see any reason for them to stop. Ever since the first season, they've only leveraged extensively one field, and they've certainly only leveraged one field for fan seating. What they did the first year, and it was sort of a problem, was they split the fields for fields 1 and 3, and fans went either direction, and if they were in front of you, you were great. If they weren't, then you were kind of assed out. What they did do is they said, the hell with that. They stopped using field 3, other than for rehab. That's where the guys do rehab, and field 3 is the most easterly of the fields. They only use field 1 for primary drills, and that's where they'd run Skelly and all the other stuff that they would do. All of their 11-on-11s would be done there, and that's where the main grandstands are. Now, they usually reserve a section on the northwest area for special guests, and sometimes it's club seats, sometimes it's a charitable organization. It varies from group to group. So you really can only get to about, I'd say, the equivalent of the 25 or 30-yard line on that field, and that's a really great spot. It's an area that's shaded, comfortable. You get a good view of everything. You need to pick your height well. I happen to be someone who moves around a lot at training camp. Insert jokes about big guys not moving. You'll notice that if I am credentialed, I'm not one of the guys sitting in the media tent all the time. I tend to follow the action and go towards the single drills. What was funny was I heard Mark talking about that on the last show, which was really, really cool to me, because I'm not trying to take any claim for that, because Mark is a fine journalist and a well-read football person. So he may have done this on his own. But I like to see the guys out there working and looking at the individual drills. I think that you learn a whole hell of a lot more by getting out there and getting close to the action, and they are really good about letting you do that. That's one of the reasons why I tell you guys to get out there to training camp. The end zone seats are good for pictures, but not much else, in my opinion. There's a special needs seating down there as well, which I kind of hate that they put special needs seating down there only, but you're still going to get a good view for the entire training camp if you are in there. There are going to be no tickets again this year, but I do expect that time slot, despite Calico Jack's distaste for it, based on the weather, to be a lot more well-attended than it has been in the past. Even if they had done it in the middle of the day, I think that the general excitement about the Bucks would have cracked that all the way up. B. Shuck is in there talking about midfields, where he's always sit about midway up. Midway is the right height, by the way. People like taking that top row. That top row chops off your field of vision. Don't get suckered into the top row. I'll tell you that right now. Now, one other thing before Rick Brown calls in, and he could call in any second now because it's 9:20. If you're going out there, let us know. Use Twitter, use Facebook, whatever. We're going to be getting together. I think Spent talked about having a field day on the 25th. We will be structuring some get-togethers over at Wing House or wherever else we want to do, especially with them being evenings, guys. It'll be a really easy thing for us to do. We can get together, have a couple drinks, talk about what we saw, and build this fan base. It's one of the things that we've done through our tailgates, which has been so strong. Whether it be local folks or folks from the UK or folks from Australia, we have built a really interesting community. I'd like to continue to do that. So I think that this training camp will give us a great opportunity to sort of extend and enhance that as well. So, yeah, I mean, and Spence says in the chat room, there's so much excitement right now in general, which is exciting for me as a Bucks fan to see people giving a shit again, because we had gone so long where people didn't. There we go. There's Rick Brown. Hello, Mr. Rick Brown. How are you, sir?
Hey, sir. How are you?
Oh, man. Look at that. You look dark and mysterious. Let me transition over into my video that's got you up there. See if that that will work.
No, I think it's the light, man. That's all.
Is that what you think? All right.
Yeah, it's the light.
Okay. Well, you actually look pretty good. I don't know why the input. Let me and guys, see, our podcast people know that we try new shit all the time. So when we're doing this, you know, sometimes things work perfect. Sometimes they don't. Give me a second here. App window, rare essence. Yeah, I don't know why it's giving me all that crazy snow around you. Oh, look at you.
Hey,
don't,
it's the DC thing.
Don't dance, man. Why you got to dance? That's causing me problems. I'm just kidding. It's fine. We'll try one more time. Otherwise, we'll just get a standard view up there of you, and we'll be good to go. This is for all of you who don't know who Rick Brown is. Rick Brown, Bucks reporter for the Lakeland Ledger, amongst other things. Heck of a sports guy. Knows his stuff really well. You guys got to deal with that strange snow picture. It was working great beforehand. I'm not sure why it's not now, but it's fine. They can see you, Rick. Wave to everyone. Say hi. There it is.
Hi, everybody. How y'all doing?
Everyone seems to be doing fine. I'm going to move my obnoxious chat room over here, and we can get going. So, Rick Brown at Ledger on Bucks. You've been out there for minicamp. We've seen your tweets. We've seen how these things go. You guys in the chat room, let me know about Rick's audio so I can make sure we get him taken care of so you can hear what he has to say. But my first question for you, Rick, minicamps continue. Who has stood up to your eyes thus far?
Wow. You know, it seems like it's been different people each day. Like, a guy whose name that you know, Chris Owusu, has performed well, wide receiver. On the defensive end, Danny Gore has had, quarterback Danny Gore has had a good minicamp. And today, Rashawn Melvin, who Levy Smith has talked about off and on how he likes tall, big and tall corners, he had two interceptions today, and he was just, he played very well today in their coverage. So those guys, just off of the top of my head, have performed pretty well.
Now, it's funny you say the corners, because that was a bit of a leading question. I'll hop all over the place a little bit because I'm going to ask you this one as well as Mark when he calls in afterwards. For the beginning of camp and the OTAs and all that sort of stuff, and when quarterbacks were throwing on air, it was all about quarterbacks look sharp, catching 80% of the balls, bingo, bango, and it was, you know, McCown looks outstanding. Glennon even looks pretty good. He's not taking as many risks, but he looks accurate. We don't hear anything about Kafka or anyone else that throws a football, so who cares? So, but now, the last couple of days, we've heard a lot about interceptions.
Yeah.
What can we attribute that to?
Well, what I think you want a good balance. You don't want just the offense running up and down the field, throwing deep balls, just doing whatever they want to all the time. And also, you don't want the defense every day just killing the offense. So it seems like it's been a good little mix during OTAs as well as during these mandatory minicamp. So it's not time to panic because, again, these are people in shorts or as Lovie Smith says, shirt and underwear.
Yeah.
So it's no big deal right now, but you see little signs of things that I like. I mean, the deep ball from McCown, he throws a pretty deep ball. It's pretty. Now, when the rush is on, I don't know how that will be, but I like his deep ball right now. And defensively, the guys, like I said, Gore and Melvin, these are guys who probably won't be your starters because Banks and Alteron Werner once you get started. But it's like to see, you always want to see some depth because remember last year against Detroit where you had everybody in the dab on secondary. So right now, it's a mix. I think the offense early on had the advantage, but I think the defense is catching up now and they're performing.
We had a question from the chat room, one Skip Brown, you may be familiar with via Twitter and for Pewter Report. He's a big Bucks fan, been around for quite some time. He wants to know who's leading in the arms race. So that's a direct question about the quarterback. You just gave some credit to McCown for his deep ball. Right now, McCown seems to be leading from the outside. But from your perspective, Rick, who's leading the arms race?
McCown.
Is it that Josh easy?
It's Josh McCown. If Mike Glennon gets on the field, and this is sort of like what we said last year, if Mike Glennon gets on the field, it's going to be a bad year for the Bucs. I'm not ready to go that far saying it's going to be a bad year for the Bucs, but Levy has put everything into Josh McCown. He's touted him up. He has become the leader of this offense, if not the whole team. It is Josh McCown, hands down.
That doesn't so hands down. That's not even close, is what you're saying.
It's not close. And not that Glennon has looked bad, because he has looked pretty good. His passes seem crisp, but again, it's not a rush. You know, you haven't seen him pressured, so you don't know if this is just a on-air thing or if he has matured. I think he has matured, but right now it's McCown.
Fair enough. Thanks, Skip, for the question. The next question I had scripted up here for Mr. Rick Brown. Again, you can find him at Ledger on Bucks on Twitter, so make sure you thank him for joining the show tonight and follow his insightful tweets. He also has another one, but I'm not going to tell you about his other one because he talks about too much bullshit on that one. So, now what is it, Rick Brown? What is it? You got like a Mark Cook handle, don't you?
Rick Brown 91.
Yeah,
91. The year that I became a Polk County resident.
Well, you are not a Polk County resident, man.
I was.
Okay. Why don't you have
in 1991?
Why don't you have Rick Brown 92 for the year you moved out of Polk County?
I did not move out of. No, that was 99 when I moved out. But that was because of my wife. But that's another story.
Okay.
Hi, honey. She's around here somewhere.
Oh, I don't want to get you in trouble. I can't mess up a man's happy home. So we had heard previously that there was a very different feel around One Buck Place. So if you could compare and contrast this year's minicamp to last year's, both off the field as a writer, who's someone there who's a professional interacting with the Bucks, the organization, the front office, and on the field, meaning what you see drill to drill between the coaches, between the players, that sort of thing. I think that would give our listeners some really nice insight. And I like the hat flip because now we can see them eyes. Look at that.
Funny. the difference, a major difference that you see is that, well, the first day of the Lovey regime, things were lighter. And you could just tell last year seemed a little tense around the entire building. I mean, to put it
lightly. No, I think everyone gets that one.
And so this year, everything has been lighter. Reporters have more access. We can get closer to the action so we can see and report things that are relevant. And we're not, the staff at One Buck, they don't treat us like the enemy right now. Now, as far as the drills, they're still teaching, and that's what the other regimes have said, that they were teachers. They're still teaching, but it's not like a parent to a disobedient student. It's more of, okay, this is what you did wrong. This is how you to fix it. It's not as loud and crazy. Now, there are some vocal and exciting coaches. Gil Bird, you can hear him everywhere. and that's fine, because that's his style. But it's not a demeaning, God darn it, what a blah, 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 mother, da, da. It's none of that. Toes on the, well, you know where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
So it is a difference. And I think one person summed it up better than I ever could have at the time. It's a more professional feel to everything at One Buck Place now.
Very interesting. You know, and it's not about piling on dirt on the previous regime, but it's been so pronounced from everyone I've spoken to that I think it bears discussion, and it does seem to transcend off-field and on-field. It's all the way across, and whether it's Gilbert, I suspect Hardy Nickerson is not particularly quiet out there. I don't know. I haven't seen him coach, but he was never a quiet gentleman, period. So I imagine that he's probably pretty pronounced out there as well. Now, there are some absentees. Not a lot, but there are some absentees. What absentee at Bucks camp worries you the most?
Well, I think the number one is Carl Nix. I think that you know, even though these two guards, Kadeem Edwards, as well as Patrick, oh, I got to get his name right,
Omame,
seem to be doing well right now. You know, Carl Nix is your guy. You need Carl Nix. This is the guy that was, when he was on top of his game, was an All-Pro for multiple seasons. He is the guy who's going to get this engine running, per se. So I'm a little concerned, but this is what I told someone today, a reporter today. I said, the Bucks didn't take any guards in the first three rounds. If they were concerned about Carl Nix's health, I think they would have picked a higher profile guard than the moves that they made during the draft. So they have confidence, so they'll let it play out.
Well, I know that it's a sad state of affairs when your injured former All-Pro expensive guard, who when he does play is the best in the league, no one can question it. When he wears shoes instead of slides, that's news, right?
You know, and you're right. And that is one of the things I noticed yesterday. He did have on shoes. And if anyone doesn't know, he's had toe problems for the last couple of years, as well as Mercer. Excuse me. So him wearing shoes was a telling sign that maybe this kid is getting healthier. He'll never be 100% healthy, but that's a good sign.
Well, I tell you, it's going to be interesting. Like you said, when he's on the field, our guard position is easily top five in the league, arguably probably top one or two. I don't know, because I haven't seen what Tedford's offense is going to do from an offensive line perspective, whether that really is as important as it has been in the past. But depth of the offensive line is clearly something we have to have. Now, who, as a player, has impressed you the most in your time out there? Overall, any position, I don't care what it is. You'll be unpopular if you pick, you know, Kanan or someone. I mean, a kicker is never going to be a popular choice. But
hey, Connor Barth, I have not seen him miss a field goal.
He so better damn well not miss a field goal.
That should be good. That should make a lot of people happy.
Hey, listen, there's a lot of Connor Barth voodoo dolls right now, and he needs to get in and make some damn field goals. I mean, I felt bad because it was a charity event he hurt his leg at. So it's hard to really get all salty about what he did, because you're like, God, he's out there trying to do good stuff, and this is an unfortunate turn of events, right? But damn, yeah. Our kicker was bad last year, so he better make some field goals. So who other than him?
Let's see. Got to be someone in a skill position. You know who I've liked? Tommy Streeter has shown flashes, and he's a wide receiver going into his second year from Miami. He's shown flashes. A lot of receivers have shown flashes.
Right.
But one receiver has really stood out. And I mentioned Streeter, but he's not the main one. Lewis Murphy Jr.
Okay.
It seems like every time I look up, he's making a play, and nice hands. I haven't seen him drop a ball yet, or 7-on-7, or on 1-on-1 drills. He runs, his route running has been smooth. I just like the way he's been playing so far. And if he can keep that up, I think he becomes a great third option for the Bucks in the receivers core. I don't want to go down to third and Ike yet, call him third and Ike or third and Murph or whatever, but he has really impressed me so far during camp.
Well, that's good to hear. I think a lot of us, you know, coming into the draft, we're concerned about receiver, and then they went out and addressed that to a certain extent with Mike Evans, and then obviously we got a little bit more there in the end of the draft, so we got some more to be excited about. In addition to having a running back in Sims who can catch the ball in the backfield. So they started to address that. But then you look at a guy like Chris Owusu, who flashed a lot last year in training camp. I was with you. This is a kid who, in training camp, you would have thought, hey, sign this cat, let's go. But he's also a guy who's had multiple concussion issues and was not able to get it turned up during the real game. Now, whether that was his issue, whether that was a vestige of the offense or inability to get the ball targeted at him, not sure what any of it was. So we'll have to see how these guys are able to actually perform in real conditions and not in underwear, as Lovey would allude to.
And you're right. And it could have been a combination of all of the above. And, you know, because he is still a young player learning the systems and learning how to be a professional. So it could have been a combination of all of that. But I think he has looked more confident this year. He's made some splash plays during camp. I think he's going to give a run for the money. I think he's right now he's on the team.
Yeah. Well, and I think that just by the signing, he's got a leg up, right? So this is going to be one of those things where, as much as people don't like evaluations in training camp when there's not pads involved, that's going to be what happens. They're going to see how he's running his routes, what kind of separation he's getting, and then they're going to have to get these guys. If you're talking about guys getting opportunities in preseason games, these receivers are going to have to distance themselves from one another quickly in those games.
Yes. You know, what I'm interested to see, the Bucs brought in someone on a trial basis, David Geddes. He played with Carolina back in 2010 and had a couple of injuries, ACL in 2011 and hamstring issues in 2012, and just didn't make the team last year. But he showed something yesterday, some speed that I hadn't seen out there. And it was pretty fun to see. I wonder if he's going to get a shot, another look for training camp. Because, I mean, he was a good slot receiver for the Panthers. I think he caught 37 balls or something like that, 500 and some yards or something like that. So he has NFL experience, and he's performed. So it'll be interesting to see if he had enough time to impress the coaches.
Well, I'll tell you what, they're going to get their time. I've got to flip this a little bit before I let you tell people about the ledger and what you do with the ledger. We talked about who impressed you the most. Has anyone not impressed you explicitly? I know you guys don't like saying stuff like that because it pisses people off, but I got to put you on the spot.
Not impressing. Let's see. It's hard to say, you know, the only reason, and I don't mind calling people out if I think they're looking bad. Everyone knows about Joe Cullen saying that Daquan Bowers didn't come in shape. Right. I think that is scary, and I think that is sad if he wants to make this team.
Yeah, if that's his intention, you know, you never know.
Right. But I really want to see him in pads because it's hard to judge an offensive line without them hitting someone and blocking. It's hard to see what the defensive line can do the same. So I want to see him in pads, but just going on
that situation.
Then you would say Bowers. I would say Bowers, but I'm not. Hopefully by the time they come back on July 24th, he'll be ready to go.
All right. Well, I mean, that's one of those camp battles that we all have to see, right? With the new acquisition and the flipping of sides, you got to see who's going to be able to hold their own. Daquan certainly has some skills and has come back from some nasty injuries, but it's going to be on him to whether or not he wants to be a pro here. So, Rick, I want you to tell people about how they can hear more from you, read more from you, participate more with you. Tell them how to interact with you at Ledger on Bucs, et cetera.
Yes, definitely. Twitter, you can find me on Ledger on Bucs. That's LEDGER on Bucs, BUCS. Or you can just go to theledger.com, go to sports, and look for my smiling face. And I usually have something up almost every day on the Bucs. So, and you can find my links to my blog through Twitter. So I won't even bore you with those specifics. But
okay,
just look for me. And if you want to talk anything, any sports, Rick Brown 91. We talk anything. 24. Do you like Jack Bauer? I love him.
Oh, get off his nuts, man.
You like DC sports? How about the Nationals? All right, you don't like it? How about the Heat? The Spurs? NBA Finals? I got it all for you. Look me up, Rick Brown 91. That's on Twitter. Find me.
There you go. There's the commercial. Rick, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. We'll have you back on again, and I'm hoping to see you over at training camp, my friend.
Hey, D, thanks, man. I appreciate it, man.
All right, brother. Take care.
All right.
All right, Rick Brown from the Ledger. We got Mark Cook ready to call in as well, which is exciting. I'm trying to find my mouse cursor here. I will let Mark know to go ahead and dial in, and we will transition right over there. I want to thank Rick again, and then we will move right into the Ginger Badass Part 2 and have some more conversation about minicamp. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that conversation with Rick. Fuck the Nats. Nice. Women's roller derby, says Lenny. You should know. Hey, we've got some friends who actually play roller derby down here, Lenny. Like, for real, though. It's for real. So, anyway, poor Mark was calling in a little bit early, and I had to decline him because on this Skype line, I can't do group calling. So he will now be dialing in, and the line should be free. And when we get him on, we will ask a different set of questions. Some of the same stuff I want to ask him about the minicamp continuing, because we've had those sort of perspectives from him over the last couple of weeks. So we get holy cow. Hello, Mark. How are you, sir?
What do you need me for? You already had a guest.
Oh, stop. You're crying. My God. How are you?
I'm good.
I tell you, the setup here is interesting because I think I might have just blown everyone's eardrums with the Skype ringtone coming through. For those of you who don't know who Mark Cook is, get your heads out of your asses. This is we used to call him the original Ginger Badass, but our writer Patches wrote an article today, Mark. I don't know if you had a chance. You write so much, I don't know if you actually get a chance to read so much. But Patches wrote an article today about Malcolm Glazier, who he calls the original Ginger Badass.
Yeah, I saw that. Yes. Very impressive.
I couldn't argue with him because I thought it was a hell of an article, but we're going to still keep that moniker for you, Mark. So
let's face the facts, though. Danny Bonaducci is the original Ginger Bob Badass. Malcolm's two. I'm number three.
Fair enough. It's okay to be tertiary, I guess. Yeah. So we've been speaking with you over time, and right now I think people are getting their ears blown out because we had the levels up high, but you guys will be just fine to think about that. And Patches, apparently, Mark has no issue with you calling Malcolm Glazier the original Ginger Badass. Patches just asked in the chat room what your thoughts were about that handle for Mr. Glazier. So
yeah, I was cool with it. It was okay. I mean, again, if I'm going to share the title with somebody, that's a pretty good one to share it with.
Fair enough. All right, now listen, we have had a level of continuation with you, and that's one of the things, like you said, well, why you have me calling? You had Rick Brown in. We got a different perspective for Rick. Obviously, you guys are your own professionals. You see your own things. But it's nice to have a level of continuity, and having you as a regular guest on the show and getting to learn your particular style is really important. So you were there for minicamp again this week for some more sessions. It seems like there's some highs and some lows going on. They continue. Is anything standing out? Or is it all more of the same stuff? Is anything changing? I see a lot more reports, and I asked Rick about this. We used to see a lot of reports about how great the quarterbacks were, and now we're seeing a lot of reports about how many interceptions there are. So what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the defense is catching up a little bit, and you would expect that. Josh McCown, though, is still head and shoulders above anybody in the quarterback battle. You know, I mean, they're beginning to become familiar to the defense, and as we've said before in this show, in training camps past, and it would make sense. I mean, you've coached football, I've coached football. You know, eventually the cornerbacks and safeties kind of know what you're running. You know what I mean? They can kind of jump routes, and they kind of, you know, when it's brand new as it was a few months ago with the first, mini camp that they had, I think it caught the defense a little by surprise because this is such a different style of offense than we've seen. The defense is getting their feet underneath them a little bit more. The quarterbacks aren't playing any worse. The defense is just playing better right now at this point. But I will say again, I can't reiterate enough, how in control McCown and this offense looks as far as, you know, there's not a lot of mistakes and not a lot of confusion. There's not a lot of times where Tedford has to stop what's going on and re-explain himself. And I think that's really a testament to Josh McCown. Talking to some players today, about McCown, one of the things was, gosh, and my head is scrambled. I can't remember which player it was, but you know what they said was, you know, it's nice to see McCown. It was Chris Owusu, as a matter of fact, who said, you know, McCown he stops in the receivers meetings. I mean, he's involved in every aspect of the offense and cares about these offensive players. And Chris, you know, threw a subtle jab to a degree and not meaningful jab at Josh Freeman when he said it's something that, you know, we were missing, something that we really didn't have the last couple of years. So, you know, I think that's, you know, that says a lot about Josh McCown. Again, as I've said on the show before, this is his last rodeo. He knows that. He's going to make some nice dollars in the next 2 years. And he doesn't have a whole lot to lose. He can go out there and play relaxed, play confident, and, you know, sling the football around. Because, again, this isn't going to define his career. If his career ends after 1 year with a mediocre season, then, you know, he had, what, 12 years in the league and decent results, never was a star. So he can only make his legacy better, you know, by going out and chunking the ball all over the field and taking those chances. Again, we see him taking chances down the field, trying to fit balls in the tight windows a little bit more than we see with Glennon and the other quarterbacks. And one other thing quickly that Owusu said was, and he got a big smile on his face when I asked him this specifically, I said, what's it like, and again, not throwing a jab at Freeman, but what's it like to have a quarterback that, you know, you guys don't have to stop? I mean, you're catching the ball on the move. Now, a lot of that has to do with Tedford's offense.
Yep.
As opposed to Sullivan's and Olsen's offense. There's an emphasis on getting the ball in the playmaker's hands as they're moving. And Chris smiled big, and he knew where I was going with that, and he said it's great. I mean, as a receiver, that's what you want. You know what I mean? You have, you know, confidence that this quarterback is going to get you the ball in stride, and that's only going to make their job easier.
It's going to be interesting to see how that offense gets implemented. You're right. When you can get these guys in stride, you get Yak. And you know, the receivers are less likely to get clobbered. They're not a stationary target for someone to
right.
come in and crush. Now, you mentioned slinging the ball all over the field, and one of the signings that kind of raised some eyebrows and I think probably heightened some interest was the Alex Tanny signing. It seems really stupid to ask about the fourth-string quarterback on a team like the Bucs at this point, but has Alex Tanny done anything of note?
Not particularly. I mean, you know, he's not getting a lot of reps. I mean, he does some stuff when they – you know, throw, you know, balls just to tight ends or individuals and stuff. But, you know, I haven't really seen him stand out. I jokingly told one of the PR guys, if you guys could get one of the receivers to stand on the crossbar holding a garbage can while upside down, this guy would be 100% completion percentage. Unfortunately, he can't play football that way. But he's a great kid. I really enjoy talking to him. But, you know, no, there's not really any standout there. And you know, the odds of him making the team are slim and none, and I think he's, you know, burned up all of his practice squad eligibility. So, you know, maybe he hasn't. I would have to look at that a little bit more. But, you know, he's a good kid. He's certainly an upgrade over Brett Smith, who they brought in for rookie minicamp from Wyoming. Brett just looked absolutely terrible and out of his element and didn't have very much confidence. Tanny at least has had some playing experience in the league, albeit just during the preseason. But, you know, he's played in the NFL some, and so – you know, I mean, he's a good camp arm. You know, he
yep.
may potentially beat out Kafka. You know, but I would imagine they're going to keep all four quarterbacks at least through the beginning part of training camp because they don't need any dead arms once the season starts.
One of the areas of extreme focus right now is the running back situation, right? And there was all sorts of speculation with the draft, and then there were some trade rumors floating around, and then there was a discussion about limiting carries. What's your position on the running back position with regards to Doug Martin and the other players? What are you seeing and what are you hearing?
Well, Doug's clearly the number one guy on the depth chart. I mean, he's clearly getting the majority of the first-team reps at running back. Sims is getting the second-team reps. And then you've got a lot of battles in between. You know, Bobby Rainey, I almost called him Chris Rainey. That would be a mistake. But, you know, Bobby Rainey, you know, he looked really, really good today, particularly when they kind of run some stretch plays. Getting to the outside, and then when he gets that first cutback lane, you know, that quick burst, you know, then upfield. And, you know, I like Bobby Rainey a lot. You know, I'm not counting Mike James out of this at all, but there's just a ton of running backs in this roster. And you got to include Jeff Demps there, too, who clearly is the fastest football player on this football team. And, you know, you think to yourself, okay, a 4.3 guy versus a 4.5 guy, that's only 0.2 of a second and the 40 yards. how much difference can it be? It's huge when you see it live in action. This guy just has a burst, and you know, he's kind of short. Not kind of short. He is short. You know, he kind of hides behind the offensive line in the way that Warrick Gunn did, and then he just kind of explodes out of holes. Now, granted, nobody's trying to take his head off right now. So, so far in training camp, Jeff Demps has about 3,000 yards rushing. Is yet to be tackled, so you know, that bodes well. And it scares me about the defense because their tackling has been just terrible. They haven't made one single tackle in any of these OTAs yet.
I love liars, Dan Liars, and statisticians, right?
And you know, for that matter, Mike Glennon and McCown have a combined 147 touchdown passes through these OTAs.
There you go. The stats are off, obviously meaningful. So it's interesting. Now, I was asked a question the other day at a networking get-together, and I didn't know the answer because I haven't been following. How does Mike James look coming off that injury? I mean, that was a nasty ankle injury.
Yeah, it was. He looks good. You know, I think he's improved, you know, every time. He was actually returning some kickoffs today for the first time that I've noticed. I'm not saying he hasn't before, but I was like, who is that? And then I noticed the number. I said, wow, that's Mike James there. So, you know, he's getting his legs back underneath him. You know, As I was talking to somebody, and even Mike James on Twitter kind of took exception to something I typed the other day when somebody was saying how they were running Doug Martin in the ground last year, and I defended Shiano, as I occasionally do, but
yes,
on this particular thing, is Doug Martin averaged, I don't know, before he got hurt, around 19 carries a game. It wasn't like they were James Wildering and, you know, running him 40 times up the middle. And then somebody pointed out that game against the Cardinals. Then I pointed out that was also, you know, Glennon's first start. So you're not going to have him drop back and throw 40 times, although I think he may have came close to that in that game and hurt him in the end with his fourth quarter picks. But the bottom line was, is they wanted to keep the game close and run the ball, and they weren't able to do that because the Cardinals knew exactly what they were going to do. But my point was, to kind of upset Mike James on Twitter a little bit, was, well, of course they're going to run Doug Martin. I mean, they didn't have a lot of depth, and nobody really knew, nobody knew that Mike James was ready to carry the load. And Mike kind of, not meanly, fired back. He says, what did you mean by that? And what I meant was exactly that. Nobody knew Mike James was going to average 4.9 yards a carry. Nobody knew that Mike James would go to Seattle and run for 150 yards. I mean, top 10 in the all-time single-game rushing records. I mean, the guy never ran for 1,000 yards at Miami. He was kind of a jack of all trades. Played some fullback, did a lot of different things, but never really excelled at any one thing. So for anybody to sit back, Mike James or Greg Schiano or Mark Dominic or these fans to say, oh, I knew Mike James was ready in week four or whatever it was, you know, they're just fooling themselves. Now, turned out, he turned out to be a heck of a running back, and unfortunately he got injured in that Miami game because he was well on his way, I think, to eclipsing the 1,000-yard mark. If he could have stayed healthy again, he ended up leading the team with a 4.9-yard average. So, good running back. I don't know where he fits on this roster. Shiano and Dominic loved him because of the versatility. But Lovey and this staff, they're certainly not tied to anybody on this roster that they didn't draft. And I think that's why you're seeing Sims getting the bulk of the number two carries right now anyway.
It's interesting that he would even get incensed by that, to be honest. But I think your point is trivially true. When you're the backup, no one knows what you can do. That is just
right.
If they knew that you were that good, you wouldn't be the fucking backup.
And an unheralded backup. I mean, this was a sixth-round draft pick. This was a guy that most Buck fans, and please tell me if I'm wrong, but I think a majority of Buck fans, when they drafted him, number one, didn't know who he was if he didn't follow Miami, and had no high hopes that he would even make the team, much less contribute this year. And he was able to do that. And he's a great kid. He's a Polk County kid.
Yep.
He always has a smile on his face. You know, nobody worked harder in that locker room and practice than he did last year. But look, I mean, you would have to be Miss Cleo or the Long Island Medium to be able to tell me that you knew this guy was going to perform as well as he did last year. I certainly didn't expect it, and I don't think anybody else did.
No, and it's a good problem to have, right? That
kind
of depth is a great problem to have. So hopefully we'll get a chance to get these guys a lot of reps in preseason and see how it all shakes out. I think a lot's going to come down to what ends up becoming a debate every season. It was a debate with LeGarrette. It was a debate with every running back ever. How well-rounded are they, and what do they expect these backs to do? Are they going to have these backs going out and receiving, you know, in pass routes constantly? Are they going to be back in production? pass protection apparently is not something they teach everybody anymore.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I will say it is something that we've seen the running backs work on during their individual period to a degree. Again, they can't actually hit anybody, but they've got other running backs who are shoving pads in their face, and they have to use their hands and lower their hips and give a good punch as if they're in pass protection.
Right.
So it is something that the staff is working on with these running backs. Every running back I've ever interviewed, we always ask them how are they blocking, and everybody's the best running back blocker in the history of the world. And unfortunately, that we know that's not necessarily the case. And again, I'm not here to bash LeGarrette. You know, I thought he was a heck of a find for Dominic and performed really, really well for this team. But, you know, deciding, I mean, it's not just technique too, Derek, and you know this from coaching. It's also identifying where to block. And then if there's not a guy coming free, maybe then you have to make that decision that you release into the flats. So, I mean, it's not just, okay, you stand here and block, you know, for the quarterback. I mean, occasionally I guess there are plays where the running back, their job is strictly to pick up a blitz if anything comes. But a lot of times there's options for him to run out on routes too and flare out. You know, and being able to handle all that in the heat of the battle and also picking up the right guy is huge. And let's face it, it's not fair for Mike James or LeGarrette Blount or Doug Martin to pick up a 280-pound defensive end that gets around the tackle. It's not fair for them to pick up a blitzing middle linebacker. I mean, that's not what they do, but it's something that has to be done. And you don't necessarily have to knock the guy or pancake him, but you got to slow him down to give that quarterback that extra half second to get rid of the football. I think Doug Martin did a really good job of that initially his rookie year and even last year. Problem with Martin last year is I don't think his hands – I think he ended up with 5 drops in those games that he played, you know, which was like 3rd on the team. I mean, he didn't obviously play a full season. For whatever reason, he looked like he was running before he had the ball, which is a golden rule we all teach every receiver. You got to catch it before you can run with it. And there were times last year that he was trying to move without the football. But we know he's got good hands. I mean, you know, he had what, nearly 500 yards receiving his rookie year. So, I mean, he certainly can catch the football. But I think they really like what Charles Sims can do. You can see even just in T-shirts and helmets that Sims is a pass catcher. He's a natural pass catcher, something that not all running backs are. A lot of them have to work on it, but he's a natural pass catcher.
And it's interesting to me to with the speed and such that Sims has and with trying to figure out where the hell to put Demps, I don't know what you do with Demps, to be honest. He's a guy I need to see him. I would see a lot of him in preseason if I were the Bucks.
Yes.
And I don't know Jeff. He's probably a great guy. He's certainly a far better athlete than I could ever be, and all the normal disclaimers. But right now he looks like he's made out of tissue paper to me, and I wouldn't bet on him being able to take any hits.
He's got to be able to prove that, certainly, to Lovie Smith and Jeff Tedford. And you know, when you have such a well-conditioned athlete, a guy with such low body fat percentage, a guy who's been training for the quick muscle twitch, straight line speed, you know, I think you're at a disadvantage when you play a physical game like football. I mean, the NFL is littered with guys who ran track and tried to play wide receiver in the league, and not many of them panned out. There certainly are some, but there's not, you know, a ton of them. I mean, the Buccaneers tried to do that back in the mid to early 80s with a guy named Danny Peebles, you know, a blazing fast track guy who never really panned out. So, you know, if it was just as simple as being able to run fast, making you a great football player, then every Olympic sprinter would finish their athletic career as an NFL football player. But saying that, Jeff Demps has a natural football instinct because he's not a guy who just came from the track field and decided to play football. He's been playing football his whole life.
Right.
And here's the one thing that he has done. He's committed to football this year. So his training regimen, his body, I think, will be in better shape and be better able to handle things. Now, those kind of athletes are also the guys that are very, very susceptible to hamstring-type situations too. And every time he touches the ball and he gets that quick burst and he loses his footing a little bit, I cringe because I wonder if he's going to pull up lame with a hamstring injury. But I think if he proves himself that he's able to withstand the beating that he's going to take in the NFL, I really think Tedford and Lovie have got some ideas and plans for this guy because he is that dynamic with his speed, and it's just a rare combination to have an athlete who's that fast but also has football instincts on top of it.
you know, it's interesting. There was a lot of discussion this week as well about the kick return and punt return game, and Lovey has obviously had some advantage to that when he was with Chicago, having some solid return players, and the ability to really change the game on the special team side by changing field position rapidly.
Right.
There was some discussion about not having anyone really stand out above themselves. When you see something like someone like Jeff Demps, you see some of the guys on this roster, what's going on with the return game? What do you see happening there? Do you think we're still going to be looking, or is this a place where one of these guys can really differentiate themselves from the rest of the wash? Calico Jack reports that Demps was a lead blocker on kick returns today. I don't know how he would know that. It sounds like bullshit to me. But
no, he's right, and it was reported. I don't know if Calico read it on our Pewter report, practice report that we have up now, but or maybe some tweets from some other writers, but. He was playing that up back position, which Eric Delarada, who did our practice report today, he and I were standing there watching that, thinking, I don't really fully understand that completely. You know, there is no wedge anymore, so it's not like he's got to go throw himself into five guys and try and bust a wedge. But that up back, he's flying and he's making contact. You know, I would tend to think it would be more of your tight end type fullback guy, but. Right now, that's what Levy Smith's doing. Now, it may be a situation where instead of having two deep backs, they've got one deep and one semi-deep, and if it's a shorter kickoff. But see, the thing with that is there are no short kickoffs in the NFL. I mean, very, very rarely do they not at least touch the goal line, if not be a touchback. So I'm a little perplexed by that, too. But Calico's absolutely right. That's exactly where Demps was at times. He did not return kicks. He was playing that up-back role.
Well, I'll tell you, that feels to me like an old coach's style. Now, they can't hit, so it didn't really mean shit. All he's doing is getting his position.
But I'm sorry, and I didn't really answer your question before you mentioned the Calico Jack thing. We asked Lovey about that specifically, and he said he's not looking for anybody to really stand out in that role because there is no hitting and things like that. Right now, he's trying to find guys that can catch the ball consistently. But I'll tell you this, I think they've put a huge emphasis. And people, when they talk special teams, they think your kicker, your punter, and your return guy. But there's 10 other guys on the field that make all of those things happen. And I think, you know, I think that Lovey believes he can out-scheme guys to make special teams successful, whether blocking schemes, punt block schemes, different things like that. And Kevin O'Day, the special teams coordinator, you know, he's trying to find 11 guys, and he keeps using military references. As far as these guys being in the elite group, and he says not everybody's cut out for it, but he's looking for 11. And he's actually told me he's looking for about 15 because he wants four or five guys to say, hey, you need a breather, let me go in there. Because, you know, that it's an attitude you have to be successful on special teams. You can put big bodies out there and they can go through the motions. But I think if we were to go back and look at some of Devin Hester's success, it wasn't just number 22 or whatever number I forgot what number he was too, but you know, I think, you know, certainly there's got to be holes there for him to find. I mean, he wasn't a guy who just danced around sideline to sideline to sideline and made everything happen on his own, and so I think, you know, I think the emphasis on the return guy may not be as strong as what we first thought with what Lovey Smith said during his introductory press conference as far as special teams. I think he means the entire 11-man unit, and I expect that 11-man unit to be pretty good this year. And so if you've got a guy who's capable, who has some speed, some moves, and can secure the football, I think they can be successful special teams-wise.
It's a powerful third part to that clause, the secure the football part. So, you know, the fast is good. The moves are important. Everyone's going to get hit, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to run the damn ball out of bounds every play. You're going to have to take your shots. But if you do get hit, and you're going to get hurt sometimes too. You don't have to always get injured. You can get hurt. But for the love of all that is good and holy, do not fumble the fucking football.
That's the key. And again, for all of the things we can pick on Greg Schiano about, he was certainly a stickler for that and did not stand for anybody putting the ball on the ground and you know, securing the football. Now, two ways to think about this, Derek, and I see what you're saying and I agree with Schiano as far as securing the football. But remember Ike Hilliard, when John Gruden would put him back? There was no way this guy was going to gain more than 10 yards. He was back there strictly to field the punt.
He put Tim Brown back there, dude.
It was the biggest waste of a play in all of football. I absolutely hated it when Ike Hilliard was back there. And he didn't fumble the football. Well, he did one time in Texas, but he got knocked out. And I don't know if that was on a punt return or a pass reception, but against the Texans, I remember that. He fumbled the ball. But, you know, I you know what? You're going to fumble the ball sometimes. I want a guy back there that can, as you said, flip field position. And you know, and sometimes it is that almost running before you get the football, trying to see the field, taking your eye off one in a split second. But you know, you can't hurt your football team on a consistent basis by not fumbling, by not catching the football.
Yeah. Now, speaking of special teams, there's something that no one's talking about, and we figured if anyone is going to blow the lid off of this story, it's going to be our fine friends at Pewter Report. I can't believe people are not discussing this. We had the changing of the guard with Andrew Konomos leaving the team. We have heard nothing yet about long snapper. What's going on in the long snap game, and should we all be scared? Because I watched Adam Hayward trying long snap because he was our backup emergency long snapper for a while. I never wanted to see that again, and I love
right.
Adam Hayward. So,
nah, they've got two capable guys right now, DiPaolo and the other name slips me right now. I was walking around the field to get to the defensive line yesterday, and they actually had a coach working with those two guys, not snapping the football, but doing back pedal drills and side-to-side agility drills and things like that. So, no, the long snapping is fine. I'm not really concerned about that. Now, I will say this. Michael Kanin told us, you know, not Michael Kanin, Connor Barth told us recently, or not recently, last, not last year, because he was hurt, year before last, that, you know, when he really went on that run, remember when he started the season off making like 20 of 20 or something, I don't know what it was, but set a franchise record for most field goals made without a miss. But, you know, he really credited Economos and Kanin. He said it's really important for a kicker to trust the two guys in front of him, to have a rapport, and you don't think of those guys needing the gel, but you really do. So it really was surprising that Andrew was gone, because what he's making versus what the other guy's going to make isn't a whole lot of difference. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a couple $100,000. It's not, you know, it's not like they brought in a rookie, because the other guy they brought in, I believe, is a veteran who would be making similar money to what Economos was making. So we'll see how that pans out. You know, the main thing is, you know, can he be consistent and get the ball where it needs to be? Because even a ball that snaps, you know, 12, 14 inches a little higher than the holder wants it can completely, you know, throw the timing of the kicker off too. So hopefully that's fine. But I'll tell you what, I will investigate that tomorrow. I will dig deep, and I will try and find as much scoop and dirt on that situation as I can just for you.
These are the things that people want to know, Mark. You know,
you're right. And I've neglected it, and I've completely dropped the ball, and pun intended, and I'll rectify that.
Well, I appreciate it. All right, listen, what else can you tell us about minicamp that you haven't already covered? What can you tell us that will get us excited, and what can you tell us that will get us scared shitless?
Well, you know, I'll say this. I don't think the panic by a lot of Buccaneer fans about the guard position is that big of a deal. The offensive line was addressed when they signed Collins and they signed Evan Dietrich Smith. So they certainly felt they needed an upgrade at tackle, and they needed an upgrade at center, and they went out and addressed it. If they felt they, you know, I don't want to say that they devalue the guard position, but they may not value it as high as others. You look at the Patriot guards. You look at some of the places that, that Jason Light has been. You take a look at some of those guards. A lot of those guys were undrafted guys or late-round guys or free agent signees. They weren't first- or second-round guys. And, you know, I think that's kind of his philosophy and maybe even Lovey's too. They're hoping Carl can come back. We talked to Carl yesterday. You know, I see the guy walking around with both shoes on, and I tweeted that yesterday, and people thought I was trying to be silly, but I wasn't. I mean, again, this guy's walking around with a foot bandaged up and a bag of ice, then we've got serious problems. But he was wearing two shoes, and he wasn't limping on that foot. Now, Carl said he's only about 60% right now, but he expects to be better when training camp comes along, so we'll see how that pans out. But I don't think the guard situation is as bad as people are making it to be right now. I think this staff believes that being strong at center and your two tackles is the most important parts of the offensive line, And really, you know this from coaching football. You know, you put people at guard because they're too short to play tackle and they can't snap the ball, so you play them at guard. I mean, you know, you can find guards a little easier than you can exceptional tackles and even solid centers, in my opinion. So Patrick Omame, he's a guy that we interviewed that I'll have a story up later on him. You know, guy that's been taking some first team reps, and they're real high on this on the draft pick, Kadeem Edwards from Tennessee State. They're real high on him, and he's really shown some improvement to this staff in the last couple weeks, certainly since being drafted, picking up the playbook quickly. So, you know, that's not panic mode for me yet. We'll see how it happens in the preseason. And hey, if they keep getting beat by nose tackles and three techniques, then yeah, you got a major problem there. But I think they'll be fine there. And I'll say this: they don't run a ton right up the Gubino in the A gap. I mean, they get these running backs outside the tackles on a lot of these plays. So I don't think you're gonna see them line up in I formation and try and pound the ball. You know, run right up people's throats. That doesn't look like the style of offense. So again, guard may not be as big a priority or need as a lot of people are thinking.
Wow, I mean, that's definitely a departure from the money we spent on going and getting the best guard in the league. And
they want him. I mean, they want him back. And I talked to Doug Martin specifically about Carl yesterday, and Doug said, man, he says, you know, we'd love to have this guy back. And he said to me, I think he used either the word mauler or greater. I'd have to go back and listen to my interview. But, you know, he said he's, you know, he's an animal in there and just takes up a ton of space and can move people out of the way. And so, you know, in the grand scheme of things, and best case scenario, Carl's able to get back on the field. We've said it before. I think Lovey said it, and a lot of people have said it. You know, a 75% Carl Nix is better than anybody they've got on the roster right now, and probably better than most or three quarters of the guards in the league right now. I mean, he's that good of a football player when he's on the football field.
Well, I think everyone's hoping he does come back. I mean, the reality is, we'll play with whoever the hell we have. You know,
well,
and contractually, you can either cut him and lose money or keep him and lose a little bit more money. It doesn't really matter at this point. But I still think you want the best guys on the field, and he's probably head and shoulders above anyone on that team as a guard. But, you know, it is certainly going to be a challenge to see how it works out. And thank you for the shoes information, because I did talk about that earlier. I said, you know, it's really interesting when that's the biggest news coming out of your offensive line is that the guy who's not playing is wearing two shoes.
Yes, if he
says he's 60% after doing fuck all last season, why do I think he's going to get another 40% better in the next 22 days?
Well, I'll say this. Carl's not planning on leaving the facility. He jokingly, but seriously at the same time, said, you know, while these guys are leaving on vacation Friday, he said, I'll be here for the next 6 weeks rehabbing and trying to work on getting better, and he's about ready to start really jogging and doing cuts and pulls and things like that. He said so. We'll see. I mean, it's an uphill battle for him, and I don't think the odds are with him that he'll be back on the football field. But I think Carl Nix is doing the work. He's putting in the work, and the training staff is doing all that they can to get him ready. He said it's always going to hurt, but he said I have a high pain tolerance. I can play with pain. But I can't, you know, he can't play with his toe literally almost falling off and MRSA eating at his bone inside of there either. So
Some people are just soft.
Yeah. I mean, cut it off and, you know, play with a nub. Come on, dude.
Ronnie Lott online, too. He said, man up. No, just kidding. I mean, the people who said that his last season when he did play said that his play was ridiculous with the amount of pain he must have been in. So hopefully he will be able to get through some of these games. Mark, I want to thank you for joining. I'm looking forward to our chat Monday and what that may hold. Down the road, as always. I'd love to get you back in the studio and get you some dinner. Maybe next week we can do that after we have a good conversation on Monday.
Yeah, I you know, mini camp, and I'm not in training camp shape. I'll admit it now. Today was brutal. We had a rain shower, and you know how it is in Florida. When the sun comes back out after an afternoon rain shower, it was brutal today. Did have a nice breeze, and I found a little bit of shade, but as I've mentioned before, Scott doesn't allow us to sit underneath the umbrellas on the patio. We're walking all the way around that practice field trying to get as close as we can for these practice reports. So I got to spend some time the next 6 weeks getting in training camp shape.
My God, I have not heard a more bitchy little whiny comment in podcast history.
What? I'm just saying I'm not in shape. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I gotta get better. It was hot out there today. So, yeah, I'm not coming to your house. Plus, I still got work to do from today.
No,
I'm not done. If I didn't work today, I would have came to the studio, of course. Especially if you've got dinner, if dinner's involved.
I was not bust your balls not coming here. It was about the, oh, my God, the sun is so hot.
Yeah, I know. Like, that's a big revelation. And
welcome to Florida.
And water
Dick.
Is wet, and the sun rises in the east. I know I'm breaking new ground there.
Hey, listen, your buddy Kurt McDonald's in the chat room tonight. He said thanks for the shout-out from last week.
We're done to throw another shrimp on the Barbie, mate. I'm just kidding. I hate people that say that to everybody in Australia.
I
don't even know what Outback Steakhouse is.
I always ask him he's from New Zealand because that makes him happy. No, Australians and New Zealand hate each other.
Yeah, that makes him real happy. Exactly. Yeah, I bet.
All right. Well, Mark Cook, follow him at MarkCook1970 or at Pewter Report on Twitter. He is certainly involved in the at Pewter Report handle, though I know you've got other people that put content out there as well. You can follow him specifically at MarkCook1970. And get out there to PewterReport.com. Track all of their great articles as they continue to put out tons of great content between him and Scott and Eric Delarada and the rest of the staff.
And the new website's coming in September. We're excited. We're spending a ton of time working on that, too. So a lot of new features, a lot of new things that will really, I think, help our website and give more content and things that the readers will enjoy.
Well, it's funny. We're going to loop back to a comment we had earlier. We're talking about the timing for training camp and how so many of them are the 4:30 or the 4 o'clock to 7:30 time slot.
Right.
And how that's triggered a bit of a deluge of comments about how that's hotter and, oh, woe is me, and blah, blah, blah. And we heard what Brian Ford said about more people being able to go over there after work, which I think is, you know, true based on our clock. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I can tell the proximity to 5.
Right.
Calico Jack insists in his 1,000 years in existence, it's way hotter in that time period than it would be in the, say, 2 to 4:30 time slot. I lived here pretty much my whole life. I think that this time slot makes sense. What are your thoughts about the time slot, and do you think anyone's really going to give a shit?
Well, yeah, I will say Calico Jack's a little crazy for saying that now. I mean, you can't tell me 4:30 is hotter than it is at 2:30. Now, if we don't have any rain or any cloud cover, I guess, technically, but the hottest part of the day is between noon and 3 o'clock. I'm
yep.
a part-time meteorologist, so I know that for a fact. But the thing that I'm concerned about is just like today, with a shower that popped up and lightning in the area that took them off the field for 30 minutes. And, you know, look, that's the one thing I will say. 4:30, I mean, you can count on some of those practices being rained out. The thing that concerns me more about it than that is you're going to have 2,000 or 3,000 people sitting on aluminum bleachers with potential lightning popping around. And then you got to walk them back out to the parking lot if practice is closed. So, you know, that's a little concerning if I were worried about the liability part of it. But I think the crowds will increase. I think people are more awake and ready to watch football. I mean, there were some, you know, it was tough, some of those 8:30 practices last year under Greg Schiano when you know, the stands were half full and the people really weren't into it. And, you know, I think it'll be a better experience for the fans, but they're going to be dodging a ton of lightning bolts and rain showers, too. So we'll see how that goes. July and August are obviously the rainiest months in the state, too. So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully nobody will get hit by lightning. That's all I care about.
Well,
and no, they couldn't pay me to be up in the cherry picker filming practice. I would absolutely not do that at 4:30 on an afternoon in Tampa, Florida. No.
You know, it's interesting because someone else mentioned the rain. I think it may have been Calico or someone, because I was saying that the Heat, it was a good move for the Heat. Right,
mm-hmm.
And then they mentioned the rain. I thought, oh shit, that's a really good point, because somewhere around 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock is normally when those showers start rolling in,
right.
And they're nasty. And they don't last a long time, but they are usually lightning filled.
Sure.
And I remember last year we had one day where there was lightning. I can't remember which day it was. And you and I think may have been the ones making the comments going, these are all aluminum bleachers.
Right.
Holy shit, they don't
yeah.
have a contingency plan to get 2,000 or 3,000 people into some sort of a relatively safe location. Is that a golf course?
There is none. It's your car. Hit the road, Jack, because you got to get to your car, because they can't fit you. They're not going to put you in one Buccaneer place. So if I were a person, I would certainly be looking to sit near the closest exit, if that makes any sense. So I'm closer to my car, and I'm getting there early, trying to park as close as I can too, because I can assure you, at some point during those 4:30 practices, at least one of those, there'll be a mad scramble of people trying to get to the car with lightning bolts around. Certainly.
That's an interesting opportunity, Mark. There's some smart entrepreneur somewhere who's going to give some sort of an answer to this question and fill that mall parking lot with little stands that protect you from lightning.
Well, the good news for me and you, Derek, is we're two of the shortest people that will be attending any of these, so lightning tends to go to the highest points, so we should be fine.
I am absolutely offended that you think I'm short. I'm 6 feet tall, Dick.
Well, maybe it's...
I don't look like it because I'm so girthy.
I was going to say maybe your width tends to pull your height down a little bit. I'm not sure.
I've heard that from many people.
And you've also heard, you know, don't wear horizontal stripes. You want to wear vertical.
I absolutely try and avoid my horizontal stripes. All right, Mark Cook, at Mark Cook 1970. As always, thank you for your time, especially after a long day at work. I hope you didn't cramp up out there. That was a big concern for most of the people in the chat room. They were worried about you.
Yeah, I drank Gatorade, not Powerade, so I didn't cramp up like LeBron the other night. I'm good.
There you go. You took the bait. You went right with it. Thank you for fucking with all the Heat fans for me.
Absolutely.
All right.
Go Spurs.
Go Spurs.
And
all
go
right.
Knowles.
Go Knowles. I'm not even fucking playing. You're such a homer. All right, man. Thanks, Mark. I'll talk to you later this week, and I'll see you on Monday, my friend.
All right, man. See you, bud. Bye.
Mark Cook, 1970, coming through for us. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. It was a fun show for me tonight. Hopefully you guys had a good time. I like talking to Mark. I like talking to Rick. They're two of the guys in the media that I particularly enjoy spending time with over at One Buck Place. I want to thank you guys for coming and participating in the show. Did I even change the thing? I didn't even do it. I had this ready and ready to go. Had the picture of Mark Cook right there. You guys could have been looking at it the whole damn time, and I did nothing. Nothing. I'm the worst pseudo podcast jackass in the world. Absolutely amazing. Anyway, thank you guys for joining. We'll get this podcast up directly post haste and have that ready for my man Goth Football or whatever the hell his handle is, Peter Roy, so we can listen to it on the Autobahn tomorrow. Old school ruin this podcast. Hey, listen, Mega Dave UK, go buy your Charles Sims jersey, brother. We forgot to talk about Heron Will. I apologize. We'll make sure we get on that on the next show. I do apologize. I need the heart-shaped ass to put up during the next show. I don't need that. I have it always. It is always just but a click away, and I'll leave it up here during the no music outro that we will do. I think Spent put up a link. We are going to do a get-together for the 25th training camp night. So if you guys want to join us, I think she's got an event already set up. She can drop that in the chat room again. Make sure you guys get out there and join. You guys who live in other countries, sorry. You're welcome to come over if you want, but I don't think you're going to. But yeah, I do apologize about the lack of Heron coverage. So I'll make sure I try and get some of that for you guys betwixt now and our next broadcast. So for no one's talking about Rugby International's Mega Dave UK. No one at all. At any rate, for Spent and for the whole crew here, it's great having you. We'll get the podcast out, and you guys can continue to enjoy Jackie. If you come to the Winghouse event, she may or may not be there. She is one of our regulars, and we do love her. And you can actually see that in person. The Wing House is on Hillsboro. The address will be in the meet and greet. It is not my ass. If that was my ass, I would never leave the house, Kurt. Never. But anyway, I will talk to you guys next week. That's enough viewing of Jackie's ass for one day. You guys have gotten enough goodness out of me. I am old school, and I am out of here.